Those shoes, Supreme Way, case 2 of the Blue Cliff Wrecking. Master Joshu, teaching the assembly, said, "The Supreme Way is not difficult. It simply dislikes choosing or avoids choosing."
Could you repeat that?
"The Supreme Way is not difficult. It simply dislikes choosing. If even a word is uttered, it is already choosing or clarity." This old monk does not abide in clarity. Do you monks, do you practitioners hold on to it or not? At that time, there was a monk who stepped forward and said, "You say you don't dwell in clarity. If so, what is there that you hold on to?" Joshu said, "I don't know either." The monk said, "If you do not know, why do you say you do not dwell in clarity?" Joshu said, "You've already asked enough. Bow and withdraw." That's the end of that case. This is a very simple and straightforward one expression of what the teaching is, and also expression of how Joshu moves and responds simply and straightforwardly, without using anything special, but simply responding and turning according to circumstances. Joshu, who many of you are familiar with, is very well known. He was a master who lived, according to records, to the age of well over 100, some say 120. We, who went to China, visited his temple, and you might remember that was the temple where the oak tree in the garden is also connected to Master Joshu, and there was the stupa in the center with his relics that we circumambulated. That was the name of that temple was Bai Lin Su. So, now this quote that he's picking up is something many of you will be familiar with. It's from what's known as the Xinxin Ming, or on believing mind, or on faith in mind, or relying on heart mind, all different translations. This is also known sometimes as the Sutra of the Third Ancestor. Sengzhan is considered the third ancestor in Chinese Zen lineage. And this sutra, or set of verses, is a very simple expression of the fundamentals of what this is all about. The first two sentences, or three sentences, it's actually three, four lines in Chinese verses. The Supreme Way, or the Great Way, or the Ultimate Way, or the Perfect Way, is how we translate the first two characters. Not difficult. Just avoid picking and choosing. or not difficult if you have no preferences, or it precludes holding to preferences, holding to picking and choosing. When picking and choosing are absent, the way is perfectly apparent, while even a hair's breadth of difference separates heaven and earth. Even a hair's breadth of difference, and you'll be off by as much as heaven and earth, is another way to translate. Hair's breadth of difference between what we holding to what we like, holding to what we don't like, or rejecting what we don't like because we hold on to what we don't like, therefore we reject. Or, to put it a different way, when love and hate are not held to, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Another way to express it. When love and hate are not held to, or both absent. Absent means we don't hold on to them. They come and go, but they're not what we hold to. The supreme way is not difficult. Very simple. And we see this all the time. This is what, if you think of the four practice principles, caught in self-centered dream, holding to self-centered thoughts. Exactly the dream. That's what makes the trouble. Another way of expressing exactly this. So Joshu used to often bring this up. There are many different cases where Joshu would start his teaching with just this set of phrases. His text in Chinese is slightly different than the one we have now. We have his text is, if even a word is uttered, is already choosing or clarity. Notice he adds or clarity. So even the lack of love and hate is still an issue. But we could leave that aside. And, you know, scholars can talk about which text changed over what time in China. That's not significant. The point is to see how Joshu is first expressing this to teach. So it's not just a matter of saying, oh, I'm avoiding my likes and dislikes, I'm doing well, I'm okay. He says, this old man, this old monk, does not dwell in clarity. This old monk does not dwell in clarity. So he takes it a step further. So how do we take it a step further? Not only is it picking and choosing, but as soon as, he says, as soon as words are spoken, there is picking and choosing. This is picking and choosing. This is clarity. This is clarity. The capping phrase on this is a little boasting. When a fish swims through the water is muddied. When a bird flies by, feathers fall. As still you have to say something, but Joshu takes it a step further. This old monk does not abide within clarity. So it's not even a matter of trying to get away from picking and choosing and thinking, okay, now I've gone beyond that, I've reached something. And the comment on that, his thieving intent already shows. Where is this old fellow going? And notice what he turns it right away to his disciples, those who are standing there. Do you preserve anything or not? Do you hold on to anything? Or not? He asks them, do you practitioners hold on to anything, to it or not? So he's testing those right in front of him. What do you hold on to? Do you hold on to anything? See, in a way, this is, he's going on with this perfect way is not difficult. Perfect way is not difficult, which is a fundamental point. The truth of our life isn't difficult, and yet, even if we say, oh, I don't have any preferences, right there, boasting of clarity. That too, do we hold on to clarity even? So this monk who steps forward was, you could say, was willing to challenge him. Of course, Joshu's already making trouble when he says, do you hold on to anything or not? But the monk steps forward, says, since you do not dwell in clarity, you say you do not dwell in clarity. If so, what is it? What is there to keep a firm hold on? What do you hold to? What is it? Not even holding on to clarity, and yet not holding on to likes and dislikes. How do you express what your teaching is? The comment on the monk's question is, the monk presses him well. His tongue is pressed against the roof of his mouth. So in other words, this monk is accomplished, has a clarity and a subtleness to be able to function right then and there freely. Joshu's response is still good. I don't know either. I don't know either. And yet, is Joshu just quoting Bodhidharma? Remember the previous case when Bodhidharma was asked, who is this in front of him? Bodhidharma says, don't know. Here Joshu saying, I don't know either. So the monk doesn't let Joshu go with this. See, what you could see is the functioning, because it's not the principles, but the functioning of practice that really practice is about. Saying, holding to self-centered thoughts, life as it is, fine, but then how does life as it is function? Otherwise it becomes a static principle. The monk asks, if you say you don't know, why do you say that you don't dwell in clarity? Why do you say you don't dwell in clarity? The commenter says, look, where is he going? He's chased him up a tree. In other words, he chased Joshu up a tree. If you say you don't know, isn't that the fundamental clarity? Are you, is that what you're saying? How do you respond to that? This back and forth dance is an important part of the functioning of our life. How do we function in all sorts of circumstances? When people do what we like, when people do what we don't like, forget about people, the universe, but we often find people to whom we include what happens in the universe. Whether we hold on to likes or hold on to not likes or even hold on to some other form of clarity. How do we respond when circumstances are as they are? How can we respond smoothly and immediately and yet not get trapped? Joshu's response, it's enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw. The commenter caps that. Lucky thing Joshu has this move, the old thief. So, in his further comments on this, the editor says, the monk coming forth was undeniably extraordinary. He got a hold of Joshu's gap and proceeded to press him. Since you don't abide within clarity, what do you preserve? But Joshu isn't someone who uses a staff or shouts. He just says, I don't know either. When pressed by that monk, anyone but this old fellow would time and again be at a loss. In fact, he says, many people these days use phrases like, I don't know either, I don't understand. But they're just using something stereotyped. They're not on the same road as Joshu. They are not in the same groove. But there's really something special about the questioning monk. Only thus could he say, since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide within clarity? Since you express it so clearly, why do you say you don't abide in clarity? Another good rejoinder, he says. If it had been someone other than Joshu, he would never have been able to explain. But Joshu is an adept. He just said, it's enough to ask about it. Bow, withdraw. His comment about the monk is, as before, the monk had no way to cope with this old fellow. All he could do was suck in his breath and swallow his voice. Suck in his breath and swallow his voice. It's this dance. In a way, we could just go with the third ancestor's Xinxin Ming. The ultimate path, the ultimate way, the ultimate truth, the supreme truth, whatever way we translate that word, is not difficult, is without difficulty, just avoiding picking and choosing. Don't love or hate and you'll be lucid and clear. But of course, even lucid and clear is a problem. Even lucid and clear is a problem. Even being everything being brilliant and transparent, that's also a problem, says Joseph. Even having wonderful experiences, that still becomes a place where we get stuck. But of course, even before that, picking and choosing, holding to self-centered thoughts, exactly the dream that traps us in all sorts of ways. The supreme way, the ultimate way, the way of what our reality life is not difficult where we don't hold to likes and dislikes. Saying that is easy. Saying it's not difficult means it's always our life. Until we jump to likes and dislikes. Which is why the practice principles are so simple. Doesn't matter if you know anything special or anything about anything. It's all just your own life. It's always, though I talk about Chinese ancestors, other ancestors, I pick it up to honor them because it's only because of their assiduous practice and effort that this comes down to us in some form. But the practice itself doesn't require any of that. It's the simplest of everyday activity that we all engage in from morning to night, or the simplest of everyday habits that we take for granted are who we are, that completely entangle us. Not difficult, not difficult. And yet, we can utter all sorts of words, and this is what Joshu shows us, not holding to his likes or dislikes, not even holding to clarity. He demonstrates by his actions, responses, this not holding to likes, not holding to dislikes, not holding to clarity. Not holding to dwelling in clarity, but being able to turn smoothly according to circumstances and yet to respond to what his disciple, what the monk is asking. So as one to take him forward and yet to turn him around so that he too doesn't hold on to clarity. So, the monk asks, you say you don't dwell in clarity. If so, what is there to keep a firm hold on? The monk Joshu responds, I don't know either. It's not that he's telling him there's this I don't know either to hold on to, but he's demonstrating it as a live action response. Don't know either. That's what there is. Can't keep a firm hold on it. But the monk takes it a step further. If you say you do not know, why do you say you don't dwell in clarity? Isn't that your demonstration of it? Joshu said, you've already asked fully, bow and withdraw. Notice, Joshu just simply turns according to circumstances and gives the monk another opportunity to see clearly what he's doing. And how do we be just this moment, being life as it is? See, that's what Joshu's so showing us. Being just this moment. The verse on this the supreme way is not difficult, or the ultimate path is without difficulty. A little speech, that's it. A little word, that's it. In one, there are many kinds. In two, there are not two. Or there is no duality in two. On the horizon, the sun rises and moon sets. Beyond the balcony, the mountains are deep, the waters cold. Where the skull's consciousness comes to an end. How can joy come up? The withered tree is giving a dragon's murmur, or dragon's groan. Though dead, it is still not dried up. Difficult, difficult. Choosing or clarity, see for yourself. I'd say that this, in the withered tree, the dragon's groan, the dragon's murmur, is a phrase that Joko particularly liked, for those of you who are interested in that. When the skull's consciousness comes to an end, has to do with picking and choosing, holding and self-centeredness, if I explain it that way. Of course, that's too much explanation. Okay. Ah, yes, I've spoken enough. And see if there's something you want to bring up with this. I know some of you have familiarity with the text, and there used to be a time when we would chant this on believing in mind, or, well, this on relying on heart mind, or sometimes we called it the Sutra of the Third Ancestor, and we used the text which began, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. The way is perfect. Like vast space, nothing is lacking, nothing in excess. Indeed, it is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things. Live neither in the entanglements of outer things nor in the inner feelings of emptiness. So I'll stop there, otherwise I'll go too far. Okay, if you want to change your position, feel free to, if you already have. Okay.
Thank you. It's interesting that you can look at these cases, these stories, from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of drew this the connection between this case and the previous case, the mm-hmm. Bodhidharma case, with I don't know either. One way that I read into that, I don't know either, mm-hmm. could also be that what Joshua is doing is drawing the monk in. We don't know.
Yeah.
You know, we're just, what I'm saying, we're in this boat together sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, that is one of my favorite, that's my favorite line of that case, in addition to, it's enough to ask about it. I think that Bodhidharma, when Emperor Wu said, how much merit is there mm-hmm. in what I've accomplished, Bodhidharma could have said, it's enough to ask about it.
Uh-huh.
Because in a very fundamental way, our practice is just that. It's mm-hmm. our practice is inquiry,
mm-hmm.
is opening up to and being a part of this experience.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to, at least I'll speak for myself, want to see practice as a way to fix our problems, to resolve issues in our life, as opposed to just, it's enough to ask about it, it's enough to look at it, it's enough to experience it, and to see it for what it is. So that's the connection I see between those two cases.
Yeah, enough to ask. Okay. Yeah.
Could you speak a little more about the withered tree and the dragon?
No. Here's what I'll do. I'll quote from the where I stopped in the Shinshin Ming. Live neither in the entanglements of outer things nor in the inner feelings of emptiness. Be serene in the oneness of things, and such erroneous views will disappear by themselves. When you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, your very effort fills you with activity. As long as you remain in one extreme or the other, you will never know. You will never know oneness. You will never know. The withered tree is a way of expressing, if you want, you could say way of expressing death, the way of expressing of all things gone. The comment on the withered tree or is the dead, in a dead tree that it's bah, the dead tree blooms again. See, that's the dragon murmuring in the withered tree is the dead tree, withered, dead, nothing's there, and yet, being dead, there, right in there, it blooms. This has to do being serene in the oneness of things. If you try to stop activity to achieve something, then your effort gets you in trouble. Just before that, there's the phrase, the skull's consciousness. The skull's consciousness is exhausted, or let me see another translation of that, comes to an end. How could joy come up? The comment on it is, he twinkles his eyes within his coffin. Twinkles his eyes within his coffin. That has to do with being dead, and yet, not, that's the dead tree. Dead isn't meaning dead, and yet it is meaning dead in the sense of not holding and doing what we consider what this life is about. Liking and disliking. picking and choosing, inner and outer, getting entangled. All of that is what we find that that's, well, I shouldn't say we find. We seem to take for granted that's the truth, not because we consciously think that, but because as soon as something happens, we like it or don't like it. When someone does something, we take it as, oh, he did that against me. Oh, he did that for me. She's rejecting me. She's doing such and such. That's what Joshu's talking about here. He's, in a sense, demonstrating how can I both clarify this for you and give you an opportunity, and then when you come forward to demonstrate the monk coming forward is demonstrating, he'll take this a step further. So then Joshu demonstrates not abiding and yet responding. Not abiding in his response. Aren't you abiding in that? He says, it's enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw. That isn't a criticism. That's a very direct way of demonstrating not abiding within clarity. See, it's demonstrating it directly. These koans, or cases, or are called cases because what they are is they're like case law. They're the publicly accepted doctrine. If you're a lawyer, you know there's, you know, case law that the Supreme Court decides, and that becomes the way the case law of such and such set of circumstances. These are similarly used in the Chinese way of expression. These are public cases that are used to show here is in these circumstances how to express and demonstrate this aspect of understanding. Here are the case law of what we do when you have a conflict between this issue and that issue. That's what we do in our way of text. This is similarly, and that's what the Chinese did in their law system, and then the Chan system took that model and set up cases that were supposed to be demonstrations of certain aspects of the teaching. See, so when Joko likes, you know, the withered tree, or the withered tree blooms, or the withered tree gives a dragon's groan.
What does that mean, dragon's groan?
Well, what is? If I explain it, it means it's already long gone. But what I'll say is, it could be a dragon's murmur, or in the dead tree, the dragon's murmur are not yet exhausted, another way to translate it, meaning that being dead and yet being able to function and be alive, dead in the sense of not holding to preferences, not holding to attachments, not holding anywhere, and yet being able to respond clearly. That's praise of Joshu. See? Joshu says, I don't abide in picking and choosing, and I don't abide in clarity. I don't even abide in clarity. See? That's the dead tree, the dragon murmurs. The dragon is used in a number of ways. There's the expression the fish climb up the waterfall and jump into the sky and turn into a dragon. Dragon is used as an image of an accomplished practice. If I talk about images, but that's getting into prosody, into the images of poetry. I mentioned it just because Jokal particularly likes it, and some of you have heard it or read it in places where she talks about it. Otherwise, I'm not a poet, and I can't say much about. And there are all sorts of, what should I say, literary rules connected to poetry that are way beyond me. But the point is to see that, well, in Zen we have the expression, die once and then live freely. The same sort of thing. That's what this is about. In the withered tree, the flower blooms, another way to express it. Meaning that it's not a matter of creating a new place to hold on to or to hang out, even if it's a place where we attempt to have some inner sense of emptiness. That isn't what our practice is about. Our practice is being, as this says it, being in right in the midst of the oneness of things, being just this moment, being able to live and respond without being caught in our likes and dislikes, or alternatively, being willing to notice our likes as likes and our dislikes as dislikes and the difficulties they create or the one-sidedness that they create in our ability to see reality more than from our self-centered point of view. We see someone doing something and we think of it in terms of our understanding of what it is they're doing and why it is they're doing and whether it's for us or against us. But right there, we're already trapped in all sorts of ways. We don't even begin to see that others are also living in that way, and we bump up against each other because we each are living in our own self-centered dream.
Hi, I've been sitting here thinking, you know, picking and choosing.
Yes.
Is right, and we have all of us.
Yes.
Have a big deal coming up in a little over a year, getting a new president.
Actually, I would say, anyone living in Illinois, anyone living in California has no deal at all, because it's all forespoken in California and Illinois.
Yeah, well, that's nice to say. But
no, it's true.
Well, I know that. I know. Okay. But the stirring up of energy that happens because of this, and it's not just not picking and choosing, this is a big deal.
Yes.
In our country now, and I wish you would speak to that.
It's always been a big deal, but unfortunately what people do is they turn it into hatred and likes and dislikes. And people have been doing that for the past few years in our country, unfortunately. I don't want to feed hatred and dislikes. I don't think it serves us, because I don't see us being able to handle it in our day-to-day life with people that we're close to, much with ordinary everyday activities. I don't see people being able to see that clearly as their practice and practice with that. If we can do it with our neighbors and our relatives and our friends, then it's easy, everything else. If we can't do it with our neighbors and relatives and friends, it's all the more difficult with people that we don't know. Otherwise, you go to your voting booth and make your choice as best you can, as clearly as you can see it. That's yours. Then see how much hatred and anger you've carried along for a whole year or 2 years and have expressed over and over and stirred yourself up and stirred other people up and created harm. See, that's what I think has been happening in our country for the last, before the previous election and ever since then. There hasn't been an ability to be present and take one thing after another. There's been hatred right away. And it's been stirred up and stirred up and stirred up. And the media has especially played on it. In fact, they've made lots of money by, you know, pouring oil on fire. That isn't, that doesn't serve, it doesn't serve connectedness, it doesn't serve harmony, it doesn't serve doing things from a compassionate point of view. Being just this moment is long gone. Being just this moment is long gone. And that's our practice all the time. Then, you want to do something? Get involved. You were involved in the 2016. I remember you went to, I don't remember where you went, to Iowa or somewhere to or you were talking about going.
Did you go with Debbie Hagen? Debbie Hagen and those.
What?
Debbie Hagen and all those women.
Oh, the women's
Debbie
march?
Hagen?
No. What? Anyway, before this 2016 election, I remember you were involved with some things going. Anyway, it makes no difference. The point is, this isn't about that. This is about seeing that how do you live from now to then so that then your actions are clear. If you can't, if for the past 2 years you've just fomented hate, and I don't mean you personally, but if you, then we just continue to burn in that way. That's really has to be our practice. If we can't take care of being with our neighbor who's different than us, if we can't take care of being with our relative who wants to have turkey at the Thanksgiving dinner and instead we want to have fish or we want to have it vegetarian and we have a fight at the family dinner about that, how can we, and people do, how can we go further? See, I think we have to see. But the point has to do with how do we practice being, before last election, I gave a Dharma talk where I said, you come into a dark zendo. There's a little bit of light and you see there's one cushion and you go take that cushion, you sit down. Of course, you don't see who's sitting next to you or who's sitting across from you. So you sit down on the cushion and you're sitting zazen. And then kinhin time comes and they open the light a little so that you could see clearly to walk. And you discover on one side of you is Hillary Clinton. On the other side of you is sitting Donald Trump. And as you turn around to face kinhin, across from you is Bernie Sanders. And next to Bernie Sanders, I don't remember who I said was another person. So let's leave it at that. If right then and there in the zendo you start reacting, this was before the 2016 election, so I said this, we had no idea what was going to happen. I said, right there, if you're already caught up in reacting, then your zazen is out the window. Then your practice is right there in front of you. Whoever's in the zendo with you is your practice realm at that moment. That's where your likes and dislikes are. Then, if someone jabs you, you say, please excuse me. But right there and then, it's how do you be noticing caught in self-centered dream, holding to self-centered thoughts? How do you be life as it is? How do you be take each moment as each moment, life as it is the teacher. That's our practice, as far as I'm concerned. And plus, I mean, there's other matters, whether what I consider is appropriate to talk about in the Zendo, especially given the laws of the nation as I see it. So, fine.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we've gone where I didn't want to go, but that's okay. Yes.
Well, mine wasn't so, it might have to do with that. It was practically speaking.
Yes.
On the ultimate level, I guess that is, we don't want to be pushing, pulling. We don't have a mind that push and pulls it. We want to have a mind that it just is. Right?
It's not a matter of wanting to have a mind. It's, there isn't an ultimate level and a, see, that's with that previous case with Bodhidharma. It's not a matter of the conventional and ultimate. All the time our practice is right this moment. In the most ordinary thing, not an ultimate. Ultimate level is, how do I put my hands together? How do I take a step right here? There is no other ultimate level. There is no other ultimate level anywhere else. The perfect way is not talking about something far away. It's talking about the love and hate that arise when someone steps in a way that I don't want, or when someone is wearing something that I don't like, or I do like. It's the most ordinary thing. You're chanting together and someone else has gone high or low or whatever, and they're off and I can't listen to them. They don't keep beat. And we have reactions to that. If we don't notice that even, and we believe our thoughts about that, then right there, we create heaven and hell in front of us. See, our practice is about seeing how moment by moment we create heaven and hell, or we miss the life that we are because we're walking down the hall but we're off in a daydream. So we miss our steps and we don't feel the universe that's walking us. See, we miss the universe that's walking us. We miss the music of the traffic of the street here on Prospect and Green. This is the music of the universe. It's the symphony of the whole universe right here, the way it is. Sometimes it's got loud jangles. The universe brings someone by with their car to make sure they keep reminding us, this is it, this is it. And we decide we don't like the car. We don't like the music that's playing through the car. Sometimes it's just the silent birds going. And we decide, oh, that's so wonderful. Oh, that's so peaceful. Yeah.
Is it that to live our everyday lives, we have to have some preferences? It's that we notice when we're having those preferences and not allowing that to cause us.
Well, we have preferences, and yet the universe sometimes frustrates our preferences. What do we do when it frustrates it? Sometimes the universe gives us our preference. How much do we hold to it? What do we get entangled in the preference? That's the point. Sure, if you're offered vanilla or chocolate, pick the one you like. Great. You come up, you're on the line for the chocolate, and you get there, and they say, we're all out of chocolate today. You've got to have vanilla. Okay, get in the vanilla line. We're all out of vanilla too. Nothing left. You're going to not have any. Okay, what do we do there? See, that's we take those who have no preferences and we turn that into a new preference. I have to have no preferences. That's what he's talking about, the clarity. When love and hate are both absent, then he went to, I don't abide in neither picking nor choosing, but also not abiding in clarity. See, otherwise, that too. If you try to avoid choosing, and you think, oh, okay, I'm getting to clarity, and that's where Joshu says, this monk does not dwell in clarity. Because otherwise we believe that, okay, I'm going to get away from entanglement, and then I'll be in inner serenity and emptiness above it all. No, that's not it either. See, how do we live in the midst of the fire and yet not be burned? How do we not feed the fire? Jeff?
How do we not feed the fire?
Yeah. Smile and be at peace.
Smile and be at peace.
Yes.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.